Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
We are past Halloween, mm-hmm. Dan, mm-hmm. but we're sticking with Stephen King today.
That's right.
Because we're reading The Gunslinger, which is the first book in the Dark Tower series. Mm-hmm. About halfway through.
That's right.
I think it's kind of a short-ish book, so we read up to chapter 3, big chapters.
Mm-hmm.
For this guy. I gotta get us a little bit warmed up though, Dan.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's a small one, and this is something that I can't remember. I feel like there's a decent chance that I say this every year, but as someone living in a very hot place,
yes,
it's been, the weather has finally turned here, okay, and we're getting some fall days, okay. And like, it's so great. It's like, truly, I don't understand how I can like slightly chilly weather this much.
It's just by comparison, Luke. It's,
I don't know.
It's gotta be just the comparison. Because I'll tell you this, Luke. I'll tell you this. We have not gotten a fall yet here. I broke out my sweaters way too early. I'm sweating. Oh. I'm wearing long pants and sweating right now, and it is miserable.
Okay.
And I can't wait for when it chills out. Normally, not a huge fan of chilly weather.
Okay.
But I think
the other day, it might be. I mean, I think that I'm also just kind of a cold weather boy, and a, mm-hmm. and a fall boy especially. Mm. Because the other day, I was about to walk the dogs, right? I walk them very early in the morning. I check the weather. A little chilly, and I was like, yes please. And I ran to my closet and I pulled out my corduroy pants, and I was like, it's corduroy time. That's right. And we went outside, and like, I was just having a ball. I was just walking, and it was a little chilly, and I was just like, this is the best. I feel great. This is what I want out of life. I want to walk my dog. I want it to be kind of chilly, have a cup of coffee, and walk my dog. And like, that's the happiest I can be. Is how I felt that morning.
Okay, Luke, this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but sometimes I wish our society was more nomadic, because sometimes I wish I could just like go to the place where the weather was what I wanted. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I wish I just lived in a tent or something, and I could pack up that tent and just like get on a train and go to like a place that had weather that was way better than what I had now. And still everything would be fine.
I mean, people do this though. Like we have the term snowbirds, for example, here at least.
Yeah, but here's my problem with it. It's super wasteful. Because you have to own multiple properties, right? I'm not talking about that.
Yes.
I'm talking about, I live in a tent, I bring my house with me, and I just like go to the place that would be nice at the time where I'm at. Yeah. Now, the problem is my profession is not one. I have not chosen a profession that's well suited to that.
Right.
But
you're not herding sheep.
Not herding sheep. Plains. I'm also not doing a tech job where I can work remotely.
Yeah.
The modern sheep herder.
That's right. That is the modern sheep herder.
Yeah.
Many are saying it.
Yeah, yeah. But I just think it would be so good. Because I agree with you, Luke. We've been down here in the sip. Down here in the tasty sippy. That's what they call it. We've had summer for like 8 months now, and I'm done with it.
Yeah.
I'm really done. And I'm a summer guy. I love summer.
What are you most excited for the fall?
Sweaters.
Sweaters?
I've got a ton of great sweaters because I used to live in Minnesota. So I've got so many good sweaters. Let me put my sweaters on.
Love a sweater.
So many.
Very good. Very good. I'm more of a coat guy. But maybe it's time for me to start accumulating sweaters. Okay. Well, I hope it comes, Dan, soon.
Hmm. Speaking of hot weather, Luke, let's talk about the Gunslinger.
That's right. So, okay, like I said, Gunslinger, up to chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
great transition, because kind of wastelandy.
Very wastelandy.
And desert wasteland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of different, like whiffs of different fantasy / sci-fi stories, just mm-hmm. from the setting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What were some of the whiffs? Do you have any specifics about whiffs you were getting?
I mean, the first one, based on like the desert wasteland stuff, was Mad Max.
Mm-hmm. Notes of Mad Max. There's some serious notes of Mad Max in there. And the guns.
And then, yeah. And the guns. And then this was later, towards the end of this, when we get the flashback of him as a child. So apologies for jumping ahead, but I don't know if this makes sense, but I got some like Witcher vibes.
Dude, I was gonna say the same thing. I haven't
read the actual. Okay, yes. So we read the two like standalone books mm-hmm. for The Witcher, but we didn't read the series. Have you actually? Do you know those like storyline? Because I don't.
I mean, I've played the games a little bit.
Okay. Well, regardless, I don't know if it makes sense, but the little like him as a child kind of reminded me of the Witcher training, at least of what I've read.
I think the whole gunslinger vibe is sort of witchery, because people don't really like them, but they have this special power, and they seem to be like pursuing people. Like, this has Witcher vibes to me, at least. So I totally get where you're coming from there. Also, they're doing like a weird special training thing. They're learning like magic words or whatever. Very in that sort of realm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have any other whiffs of fantasy connections?
Fallout 3.
I think those are the two that I had.
Whiffs of Fallout 3.
Okay.
In here. Obviously very different time period, but
yeah,
it was giving that for me. Speaking of another whiff that this book is giving off, why is Steven so horny? Did you ever think about this?
Yeah, I did.
So we've read two Stephen King novels now. I've read a third because I read The Stand a while ago. Steve is very horny.
Yeah.
In the first half of this book, I think like the main character either has sex with or wants to have sex with like three different people.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Four?
I mean, okay. So there's obviously Allie, who he does.
Yeah.
There's the big preacher lady.
Yes.
Who's smoking hot, apparently.
Uh-huh.
And then is the third that you're thinking of, I forget her name, but like Kinnerly's daughter?
Yes.
Or something, I
think. Yes. One of Kinnerly's daughters apparently is like looking at him really sulkily.
Yeah.
She's looking at him like she's DTS.
Sensuously.
And one of them is like fondling his daughter's breast at one point. Like, it's just filled to the brim with horniness. Yeah. And the Salem's Lot was also super horny. Because all the vampires were like, oh yeah, they're vampires, but they're fucking hot, you guys. It's like, these vampires are smoking.
Right.
This is not a criticism necessarily. Like, Steven, you know, if this is who you are, and you know, you're writing good books, maybe this is just part of the human experience, right? Maybe it's just the world's a horny place, is what Steven is trying to say.
I mean, the world, that's true. I did note this, and I'm trying to decide what I think about it. I think I could do with a little bit less. Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's to the point where I'm like noticing it. you right. know? But I'm yeah. not, I'm not like putting the book down because of it.
Right.
Maybe.
You're not like rolling your eyes and like, oh, okay, come on, Steven.
Right. Because on a certain level, he is trying to do set the scene of like a gritty world and that
where everyone's
like,
sexy.
Kind of goes with it, I guess. Yeah, gritty but sexy in a way. And that kind of goes with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I don't mind it. I'll say this. I don't mind it.
He does. Okay, that's good. He does go at one point from Allie's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mostly male towards female, but there is a little bit of female towards male. So
right.
Somewhat of an equal opportunity horniness.
That's,
I guess,
feminism, you know? That's feminism.
I don't know if we're there yet, but yeah, it's good. I will say, so the first one of these, or like the first main one, which is with him and the gunslinger and Allie,
mm-hmm.
or Alice, he's so mean to her at first.
Yeah.
When she is like propositioning him, and I think he looks at her with a facial expression that's so mean that she like starts crying, and then he's like, yeah, we gotta turn the lights out, listen. But he's also like in his head being like, she's attractive.
Yeah, right.
But I like, is he negging her? What's happening?
So good question. Because I noted this as well. It was like, oh, this guy is kind of rude. This guy kind of is bad. I think this is sort of more of a consequence of the world that we're in, where our guy is just has to be really guarded and like can't really, like, you know, if he is like kind to her, it's going to make it a lot harder when he inevitably has to blow her face off later.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's had a lot of these experiences before, like he has at the end of what happens when he has to leave this town. And
okay.
And he is sort of,
so he's
tainted by that.
And okay, so he's kind of trying to make an effort ahead of time to make sure that it's purely physical and there's no emotional connection.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
By being super mean.
Well, and I think he also knows he has to leave, right?
Yeah.
So in some ways, you know, maybe this is a kindness in his own way. He sees it as a kindness of like, if I'm too sweet to her, she's going to be really sad when I leave.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying he could justify it this way.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think there's also kind of a, going back to our Witcher comparison, they haven't said it, but does he have some kind of like biological differences?
I don't know. I mean, he's had specific training, but I don't know if his like body is any different.
Okay. Not that necessarily means anything in this context, but
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just, when he came up and he was like describing her, and it was like, you know, she's maybe slightly past her prime, but she was clearly very beautiful once. And then fast forward to being like, I can't even look at you if we're gonna hook up. It was kind of an extreme. But yeah, maybe it was kind of a distancing himself tactic.
Maybe. That's just horribly rude. But we also have to keep in mind, he's apparently not the smartest guy out there.
Yes. Yes.
I love this scene where his dad's talking to him and he's like, look, son, you may not be as clever as the other boys, but that'll do you good. It's like, damn,
I
dad.
Do, yeah. There are two parts of this that are funny. Number one is just the fact that he's telling his son that he's not very smart.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that he's like, that's actually good for us. That's good for this profession.
It's actually perfect. We're really glad that you're not bright enough to have like morals yet.
And I had thought about this ahead of time, but it kind of checks out when I think of what he's doing, which is like just following the man in black and not really planning that much ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Like so I had this note that was, he's just walking through the desert.
Yes.
And I guess it's not a desert the whole time, but like he doesn't know how far he needs to go between like water refills.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He hasn't done his research ahead of time and been like, okay, there's 75 miles in the desert between these waters, so I need this amount of water and I need to ration it at this time. He's just like, I don't know how far I'm gonna go. I'm gonna take some water and let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, Luke.
And like on my first note, it was like, okay, this is insane to just go.
Yeah.
To just be like, it'll work out.
Yeah.
But with our now knowledge of him just not being the cleverest boy, it both makes sense because, yes, he's not very clever, and also makes sense in terms of it being a good thing because, like, if he was smart, he wouldn't do it, right? And he wouldn't succeed.
Yeah, yeah, this is true. I will say there is a certain bit of, like, dumb reasoning you can do, which is, like, I'm following a guy, so there has to be enough water for that guy.
Yeah, but he's like magical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Luke, I'm not saying it's good reasoning. I'm saying it's like,
okay,
as long as I follow this guy, then I know there is enough resources to make it along his path.
Right, right. But the problem is that I haven't gotten the sense of him being like, I'm going to take this amount of water per hour or whatever.
No, he kind of just fills up his water skins and goes.
And then the other thing in the same vein is when he has a mule, or is it a I don't know, some kind of, he has a mount. Yeah. I forget if it was a mule or what.
I think it's a mule.
And just like rides it until it dies.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really change anything.
No.
I don't know. I have a hard time like articulating why this is weird to me.
Okay, there's a few things about this. And I can understand, okay. So on the one hand, it feels really weird because he doesn't seem to be in that big of a rush. Like he mm-hmm. stays in the town for like 4 days, where if he was in a rush where he needed to ride his mule until it died, you would think he would be like, sorry, can't talk. Don't care if there's a trap here or not. I got to keep going.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't know how, if like mules are like more or less water efficient than people, so maybe it is slowing him down. Maybe he can carry more water for himself on his own than like him and the mule's worth of water. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So
yeah, no, I get that. Yeah,
so that maybe is why the mule died, is he was like, listen, mule, I can't give you any more water, so you're gonna carry what you got as far as you can, and then that's it. We gotta part ways, friend.
Yeah.
Also, why didn't he sell the dead mule to this guy? The mule died. Okay. He gets to Brown's hut, right? And Brown is like hesitant to give him any beans because he's like, beans is big out here. And I can't be giving everybody all my beans. And he's like, my mule just died. And Brown's like, okay, I guess I can give you a few beans. And it's like, no, just eat the mule. You're looking for protein. We got protein right here.
Right.
Give me some mule jerky. Send me on my way with a bit of mule jerky.
Yeah, I mean, like, with that source of just supplies, I guess, in general, pretty wild. I guess, I mean, okay, so his interaction with Brown, the whole thing of it intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, like, very friendly.
Yes.
In kind of a surprising way.
I mean, I'm realizing
as I'm going through this that like there's a lot of parts of this book that something is interesting to me about it, and I'm having a hard time articulating what it is. But so, like, yes, it's tense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be of, like, a very similar mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it just, everything just, like, works out really smoothly in their conversations and in their interactions.
Right. But they're both, like, naturally suspicious of each other.
Right.
But it does work out because they sort of acknowledge, like, real, recognize real in a way.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lot of unspoken things,
mm-hmm,
that, despite being, like, people who live completely different lives, have almost nothing in common. They know what each other is saying. Yes. In their unspoken communication, mm-hmm, which is kind of incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the other whiff I was getting from this book, Luke. You remember the vagrant?
Okay. Yes.
This is,
yes,
giving vagrant whiffs to me.
I can see that.
just
wasteland,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Luke, everybody is growing corn in this zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's growing
corn. Except
for
the bean guy.
And there's a bean guy, apparently. Yeah. They just told us. So one of them told a story about kids carving on, like, gourds and pumpkins. And, mm-hmm, on the reaping, they were like, at reaping, kids carve gourds and pumpkins. Why are we only growing corn? Grow some pumpkins out here, guys. Pumpkin seeds, pumpkin pie, pumpkin. I don't want just corn 24/7. Give me some pumpkin.
Right. This is gourd. Listen, we're going to keep doing whiffs of other media, because this also kind of gives me Interstellar vibes, where in the future they can only grow corn. now, I was a little bit surprised, especially that Brown is just doing corn.
Yeah.
I don't know, because they have, like, a lot of resources and it's not clear where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you mean in the
Allie,
town?
For example, yeah, has burger meat from some potentially, like, radioactive animal.
Right. Right.
And he kind of references that as, like, cows, right?
Can I also say, Luke, it's fresh? Because I don't think, mm-hmm, they have refrigeration.
Yes.
And he just grabs a chunk of it when he leaves. Did you, yeah, notice this? Buddy.
Right, right, yeah. But point is, like,
yeah,
they have other people doing other farming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't see it. We see all the corn.
Yeah. Maybe it's just because the corn's easy to spot, you know?
Yeah.
It's, yeah, all high, it's all tall, whereas the pumpkins, it's like, is that a pumpkin? I don't know. It's not the right time of year for the pumpkins.
Yeah, that's true. It's not fall yet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For them. They haven't pulled out their sweaters for sure. I think that everyone just does corn, it seems, I guess. And you gotta, in a world full of corn guys, you gotta be a bean boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how you make the big bucks.
That's right. That's right.
Because bean boy, as I'm gonna start calling him.
Yeah.
Because I forget what he actually calls him.
Like Papa Doc
is,
or something.
Is going around trading his beans,
mm-hmm,
for, you know, whatever everyone else has got.
Corn, I guess.
Okay. I'm now seeing a flaw,
yeah,
in my plan to be a bean boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are they processing the corn? Because, like, the reason that we grow a lot of corn in the United States is because you could process it into a bunch of things.
Well, because the government subsidizes a bunch of it, too. But,
well, yes.
Anyway. Yeah, it seems like they're just throwing it on the grill. It seems like they're eating, okay, corn one way.
Man.
And they're eating a lot of it because he eats 3 cobs of roast corn when he stays with Brown.
Yes.
It's, yeah, a lot of corn.
Actually, I have in my new business model, since my bean salesman fizzled out, floss.
Because, oh, so smart.
The amount of little corn thingies getting stuck in between people's teeth,
mm-hmm,
is insane.
Oh, this is perfect, Luke. This is perfect too, because all you do is you take the leftovers, you take the trash from the corn, the husks, and you turn it into floss. Because corn's already got that.
Yep.
Corn's already got the little floss, the little hairs on it. You just have to like do a little bit of processing. Boom. Now you're making money.
That's right.
That's upcycling.
There we go. This one's better. This one's better.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, they still have to pay you in corn, which is part of the problem.
God damn it. Yeah. I mean, okay, this is the other question that I have. Our gunslinger, Roland, I think is his actual name.
Yep.
Is paying people in like roughly cut gold pieces.
Yes. He's a real
libertarian. It's not clear to me if this is like an official denomination.
Yeah.
He goes to these places and clearly way overpays because they're like, I don't have change for that. And he's like, that's fine. My question is, is this like a currency actually? Or are they just like, oh, gold is good generally, so that's probably enough?
I go back and forth on this. On the one hand, it seems like it's just gold. It seems like they just see it's gold and they're like, yeah, totally, I can barter with this. This is gold.
Uh-huh.
But if that were the case, Roland's cutting these pieces into smaller pieces, right? He's not going to give him a big full coin when it's just an amount of gold. So I take my knife out, I cut one of those in half, and maybe I'm like, yeah, this is closer to what it's actually worth. I'm not going to give him a full round disc. And if it's but if it's currency, like it doesn't seem like there's a government out here that you could go to a bank and like exchange it for the local currency.
Right. And no one has change for it. So like, unless people are going to buy like a house with one of, like when he pays for some burgers with a big gold coin thingy, like what does she then do with the gold coin?
So I think it makes more sense for like a business to have it or somebody that's established to have it, because you can probably buy a lot of something non-perishable with it, right? Like next time Bean Boy comes to town, I'm going to buy a full sack of beans that's like a fair trade for this amount of gold.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But then again, he's not the smartest bean in the sack, right?
Right. Because he does like... Like, for all of these transactions, he then gets more of it later.
Yeah.
And then pays again.
Yes.
And it's like, come on, man. You clearly overpaid for this the first time. So, when you're setting up your mule.
Yeah.
Like, hey, can you watch her for a week?
Yeah.
Instead of... Because like you have enough money to pay for that, I think.
And then if you need to take her early, instead of being like, you can just be like, I'm checking out early, keep the change.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not bright. He's not bright.
He's not bright. This, again, we're going to get back to the Witcher vibes. This does have Witcher vibes of like people naturally don't like this guy. So it feels like he's using the money to buy their acceptance. But also, Luke, gold's heavy as shit.
Right.
And if you got to walk a long distance, I wouldn't want to carry a lot of gold. So maybe I don't mind. You know what? I'm not thinking about this as currency. I'm thinking about this as weight. And I'm like, I got to get rid of this weight. Here, take a full coin. I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to be able to spend it where I'm going anyway.
Okay. Sure.
So he's shedding weight here. He's shedding weight. Same thing with the bullets, Luke. Bullets, they're heavy. That's why he had to blast a bunch of townsfolk. He was like, these bullets are heavy. I got to shoot them. I got to get rid of them.
This is true. Yeah. He's carrying, like, speaking of this, he's carrying a lot of weight.
He's carrying so much weight, Luke. This guy's jingling and jangling all over the place. This is why his mule died. His mule was like, I'm carrying 50 pounds of gold and 1,000 bullets. I can't do it anymore.
And also, like, I mean, he is carrying, let me just think of the math for a second. Because does he fill up between between Brown's place and the way station, I think is what it's called. Does he fill up on water?
Yes. Well,
he does.
No. He does not.
So I think this was like a 3-week walk.
From Brown's place to the way station?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought he was like, what was it? Did he say 16 days?
Okay, let's do 16
days. I think it was about that.
Okay. You got to drink, like, he's in the desert, so he's got to drink a lot. Mm-hmm. But let's go with the standard 2 liters of water a day.
Okay.
32 liters. He's carrying, what's my math on this? That's like 75 pounds of water.
Yeah.
And then a million bullets.
Yep.
His guns.
Any gold he's got left.
A lot
over.
Of gold.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what food he's carrying, but presumably some.
Maybe he eats bullets.
Maybe he could be eating bullets. And then I'm assuming he's not. Is he just laying on the ground at bedtime?
There's no way he's bringing a bedroll.
No bedroll. Yeah. He's a strong fella, I guess.
You gotta be, Luke. If you gotta carry the weight of those guns around, you gotta be a strong fella.
Gotta be a strong fella.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Unless he's like out of bullets, right? Unless he like used all his bullets.
Right.
It feels okay. Because I have been trying to think about the practicality of this organization of the gunslingers. Doesn't seem like there's a lot of bullets to be found where he's traveling. Like, nobody else has a gun in the town that he goes to. They're all coming at him with forks and knives and shit. So, your guns are kind of useless as soon as you run out of bullets for them. And bullets are, like, very much a produced, manufactured good. Like, you need infrastructure. Significant infrastructure to use your weapon.
Right. You can't just be like, I need some bullets. Give me a couple hours to shape some out of clay.
Right. Or
you
can't, like,
you cannot do that.
Exactly. And so to train in a weapon that is so necessary, so dependent on the trade networks in the area, feels tough. Feels like
we haven't really talked about it that much, but maybe there's some level of magic.
Yeah.
Because there is magic. So I'm theorizing, although he has to reload, I guess, actually.
Yeah, but maybe
I was going to say his guns could be like, you know, running on magical ammo or something like that.
Right. But maybe like the bandolier he's got is magic, where bullets keep appearing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which if that's the case, make your just like. Figure out how to put that enchantment on your guns themselves so that the guns just always have bullet. Like, what are we doing?
That's cheating, Dan. That's just
right. You have to reload. That's unfair. The rules. Well, and Luke, there's definitely some magic here going on because Roland performs what I can only describe as a gun demon abortion.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, go on. For that.
He doesn't like shoot the gun, I don't think. He just kind of puts it up there.
Yeah.
And then the demon fetus is aborted.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so there, you know, there's some magic, I guess.
There's also the time where the man in black brings that one guy back to life.
Yeah. Kinda cool.
There's a lot of things that have happened so far that I don't understand what's going on in them.
Right. Right. Like our boy.
The boy who lived in New York City.
Yeah. Is this,
that's one.
I mean, is this giving like purgatory vibes to you where this is like an afterlife?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's the vibe I'm getting, is this is an afterlife and everybody here is like died and is like figuring out what to do now. That's why they have Hey Jude on the jukebox.
Yeah. But then there's like other just interactions that I don't think that I have enough information to understand yet. Like you said, a lot of they kind of like the Witcher instinctively don't really like him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably true, because there were a few interactions where I was like, what is going on? The main ones are when he's talking to, I think his name is Kennerly, who like watches his mule, and he has a daughter that he's like, I don't know, something weird is going on there. Mm-hmm. And they're just, their interactions just make no sense to me when I'm reading them.
You mean when his daughter like swings on him and he just sort of stands there, yeah, and is like, okay, you better watch her. I'm going to leave now.
I mean, this one, like, it's kind of after this religious experience. And so I think that plays some role. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. I also don't really understand what was going on with the guy that came back to life.
Yeah. You mean like that he was like high on the devil grass or whatever?
I mean, I know that he was high and just like living a very unhealthy lifestyle and then died, and then he gets brought back to life. But like, I don't understand why any of this happens.
So at least the gunslinger's explanation, Roland's explanation, is that the man in black is leaving traps for him. And this whole town is essentially a big trap for Roland, which he sort of walked into. Like, he sort of knew it was a trap, stayed anyway, and then sprung the trap.
Right.
And then just managed to get out of it.
Right. But even then, it's like, okay, so the trap was basically this priestess, I guess, preacher, whatever we're going to call her.
Yeah.
Who convinces everyone that the gunslinger is basically the devil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the other things. Like, you didn't, that's the trap. Why did you do the, like, bringing this boy back to life stuff?
Because that was the alley trap.
Other than just, like, it was fun. It was cool.
That was the alley trap. Because Allie, he put this little note in her brain that was like, you tell this guy 19, yeah, and he'll tell you the secrets of death.
So is it just he's an asshole, though?
I think he's kind of an asshole, yeah. But he's a funny trickster asshole. Like, he's goofy and silly. He's just pulling big pranks on everybody, you know?
Okay, sure, yeah. Do you think you could resist the 19 thing? Do you think you could say, like, never say 19 to this guy?
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
I think so, too.
It's not hard.
I don't really want to know this.
Be like, hey, guess what? I'm going to find out one day, so it's not really bothering me.
Also, how bad could it possibly be?
Oh, Luke. Oh,
do you know
no.
what I mean? Because, okay, so basically the idea, right, is that if she says the word 19 and asks him, yada, yada, he will tell her what death is, basically.
Yeah.
And then so she eventually does it and then kind of goes crazy and wants the gunslinger to kill her because of this.
Yeah.
But like, if the thing that I heard from this guy about death being terrible, because I'm assuming that's what it had to be.
Not necessarily.
I wouldn't be like, can you kill me?
I mean, it might.
The only way I would say can you kill me is if it's like, oh, that sounds phenomenal. But then I'm like doing it in a different way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, I think you're underestimating how horrific this thing is that she heard, right? Like, imagine for a moment, this is purgatory, you've already died. And then the thing that the person tells you is like, you have already died. And you are currently in the in-between between heaven and hell. And there is like, I don't know. I just feel like there are things that they could say that would make you just like want to not have to deal with it anymore, to deal with this change in your reality. And I think, I don't know. It's very Lovecraftian, right? It's very Lovecraftian in the sense that you can go mad just from hearing somebody say something to you. Or from like staring into the void. But I don't know. Like, maybe it's rad. Maybe it is rad. He's like, oh, I want to go back. I had such a good time. He's like, have you ever heard of Dave and Buster's? Unlimited tickets. Come on.
Man, that's tough to beat. Yeah. I mean, okay, I realize that I'm overthinking it, and like the point of this is that there's supposed to be some mystery.
Yeah.
But
come on, Luke, have some fun.
Have some fun. That's okay.
Another thing Steven loves, a man boy duo.
Oh yeah.
Steven, there's two things we know about Stephen King right now. The first, he's a very horny individual. And the second is that he loves a boy man team up.
Yeah. Yeah, he loves a very competent boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That teams up with the guy. With a
pretty competent guy.
I like that this is the gunslinger interprets this as the man in black's next trap. He's like, ah, man, his next trap is to make me love this boy and take him with me. It's like, some of these are kind of just nice things.
Yeah. But I think this is part of the trauma, maybe part of the horrific nature of this gunslinger's work is that they feel like any good thing in their life is a trap.
Yeah.
Even if it's just like a good thing that they've got.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
It's a sad way to go.
It is very sad. And I mean, I'm trying to think, because he loves this boy very quickly, which on one level I get, but I feel like it has to mean that everyone else he's met has been like terrible.
Okay, Luke, I'll say
because like, they have a fairly normal, they're like, nothing super amazing happens other than the boy's like story of how he got there, I guess.
But the boy also cares for him, right? He passes out from heat exhaustion, and the boy nurses him back to health when he could have killed him and stolen his cool guns and gold, which I'll say, when I was a boy, there would have been a part of me that was like, oh, this guy's got cool magic guns and a lot of gold. Well, I mean, he did just die, so he's probably not using them anymore.
Right.
I also think that this boy has maybe not yet been touched by the wasteland in the significant way that everyone else has, because he's clearly recently come back, like come here from New York City, where he used to live.
Right.
So I feel like there is something special about this boy, that he is like not tainted by the waste.
Sure, I guess that's fair. Well, this leads to my next question.
Yeah.
Because most of what we have read so far has been wastelandy. But that's just like this stage in his journey, because we have now gotten to like mountains. And then we get the flashback of him in this city that he grew up in.
Yeah.
And so the world is not a wasteland.
Okay. I forgot about this. You're right. Yeah.
Now, the world might still be terrible. Because he does, like, even in his flashback, like, the people that he's interacting with are not the best.
No. No.
But it's not for, like, lack of water and food and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I'd forgotten about this like flashback zone. I will say it sounds like that zone has collapsed in a meaningful way.
Well, I can't tell if it's collapsed or just like was conquered by this other person.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe then this boy reminds him of himself as a boy.
Oh.
You know?
Maybe he can be the father that
he never had.
Well, he had a father, so
right,
but yeah, a better one.
Mm-hmm.
Although his father seems like fine
aside from calling him sort of a dunce.
Yeah,
he does seem fine.
this other like mentor figure seems terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a very short flashback, so we don't have a ton of information about this. I forget, actually. We should have said this. Have you read this book before?
No.
Okay. Okay.
You think he's ever going to catch this guy? What if it's the wrong guy? You ever think about this? If this is the wrong guy?
Well, I mean, he does keep getting confirmation that the person ahead of him matches his description.
Sure, but like, I don't know. A lot of people wear black.
Right. So do you know what a gunslinger is? We've kind of been dancing around it, other than the literal meaning of the word.
So it's kind of difficult for me to figure out. On the one hand, it seems like it was sort of a government organization for a while. I feel like they're not necessarily trained to do this thing that he's doing. I feel like he's doing this as a revenge for the downfall that happened to his like happy world that he lived in. I feel like the man in black is partly responsible for this like collapse that happened of his world.
Okay.
And so I feel like he's out for vengeance right now as a gunslinger.
Okay, potentially. I can't tell, because I do think that this collapse that he references happened a long time ago.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the man in black is not responsible, obviously. But because the end of the flashback is that, like, it says that 5 years after that is when it gets conquered by, I forget the name of the guy, but
the, like, good man or the good fellow or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was when he would be like still a teen.
Right.
And so maybe this is because we've been talking about The Witcher, but now I'm viewing them as just like people that track down like criminals or something. But I don't know, that's kind of just a complete guess.
He does seem to have the skills for it though. So maybe this organization was like headquartered in this place where he grew up and has been conquered, but they do train people to go out and do it. Although he does say he's like the last one left alive, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know. It's hard to tell. It also seems like other people know what his vibe is. Like, people know what a gunslinger is, or they seem to.
Yeah.
So they would have to be traveling around for this. I don't know, Luke. I don't know, Luke.
I don't know. It's not a great life. It seems to me.
Not right now, at least.
Yeah.
But then we haven't really seen a lot of great lives.
Which, again, I feel like it's just because, like, this particular zone is bad.
Right, just move, guys. It's like our problem just with the last book. Well, not the last book. The one where they were the goat herders in The Steerswoman.
Right.
It's like, just don't live here.
And he's like, does anyone know what's beyond the desert? And they're like, no, it's huge. And like, he just walks it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess this is, part of this is because it's kind of a, as we've discussed, maybe a purgatory situation where people are only here for like a few years, it seems like. Like everyone that he learns about in Tull or whatever the city's name is, the town. Is like, oh yeah, she came here 5 years ago. She came here 7 years ago or something like that. Which, so I guess people are just kind of cycling in and out.
Maybe. Or they're just...
Not a lot of institutional knowledge getting built up.
Doesn't sound like they're doing a lot of reading and writing.
That too. Well, paper's very valuable.
That's true. So they're only putting a few things on paper, like the sheet music to Hey Jude.
Right, that's key.
Big one there. Okay, Luke, well, hopefully we're going to have some of our questions answered for next time, because we've got a lot of them.
We do.
But for next time, let's go ahead and finish The Gunslinger.
Yep.
We'll be sure to come up with the hot takes.
And keep being dumb nerds.